You may likely have heard me talk about one of my favorite products in several episodes called Adrenal Calm. It contains a unique blend of botanicals and nutrients that support the stress response, particularly promoting cortisol balance. Specifically, Adrenal Calm includes a blend of adaptogenic botanicals and nutrients formulated to counteract the effects of daily stress and support healthy energy levels. It also contains phosphatidylserine and L-theanine, both of which reduce that half-life of cortisol, or in other words, calm adrenaline. I love using this in the afternoon if I've had a stressful workday or before public speaking. It can also be taken on a daily basis, as many of us have more daily stress now than ever before. If you're interested in learning more about adaptogenic herbs, read Chapter 6 of my book, Your Longevity Blueprint, and check out our product guide info sheet at yourlongevityblueprint.com/product/adrenal-calm. To get 10% off Adrenal Calm or L-theanine, use code CALM at yourlongevityblueprint.com. Now, let's get back to the show.
You are exposed to an EMF that is man-made. These are frequencies that do not correspond to natural light sources that we get from nature, such as the sun or fire.
Welcome to the Your Longevity Blueprint Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Stephanie Gray. My number one goal with the show is to help you discover your personalized plan to build your dream health and live a longer, happier, truly healthier life. Today you get to hear from Nick Pino. I've been wanting to have him on the show for years, and if you've listened to my show for long, you've probably heard me talk about the steps I've taken to reduce my EMF exposure in my home, especially when sleeping. Today he's eager to share how EMFs stress your biology and how to easily minimize your everyday EMF exposure, especially in your home. He'll highlight regulatory capture at the FCC and why regulators have failed to protect the public against this radiation. This is part one of a two-part series. Let's get started. Welcome to another episode of the Your Longevity Blueprint Podcast. Today, my guest is Nick, the EMF Guy Pino, who is the number one best-selling author of The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs and an advocate for safe technologies. Through his unconventional approach, blending humor, science, and common sense, he's becoming a leading voice on the topic of electromagnetic pollution and how it affects our health. For the last few years, Nick has been interviewing some of the best minds on health and technology and facilitating the creation of courses and educational materials to raise awareness on this very important issue. You can find out more about Nick at theemfguide.com. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
This has been a long time coming. You didn't know that, but I've been wanting to have you on the show for years because I was...
I think I saw your name in there. I know it's tough. You know, there's been so much demand, and I think it shows that the awareness around EMF is evolving in the right direction. Many practitioners and other people in the health space that have this holistic model of health in mind discover that EMF is a real factor in determining how clean or, you know, health supportive your environment is at home and at work, for example.
And there aren't many specialists. So I was one of the very first participants in your, I think you called it your beta test group for your electrosmog course. I don't even know what year that was, but that was a long time ago. And I'm sure you've, you know, refined it and you probably still have that course now.
2018.
Yeah. So I'm hoping we can share some of that information today. But of course, I always want to ask my guests their stories. So how in the heck did you become the EMF guy? So how did EMFs really pique your interest?
Yeah, I've been talking about environmental toxicity and different environmental toxins such as herbicides, pesticides, or even contamination in food. For example, you know, high levels of arsenic in rice in California, or fruit juice is another one, especially from Consumer Reports in the last several years, did an extremely good job of testing different food products and realizing that, yes, you get nutrients from foods, but sometimes you also get things that shouldn't be in there and that are not nutrients, that are just a detriment to your health, and you should aim to minimize these toxins. And that was, I started 14 years ago in 2010. And it makes me age a little bit, but I'm still very young. You know, I'm just 36, but I started very young. And as a citizen journalist, just writing about what my findings were. And very quickly, I realized that, yes, the some regulatory agencies are putting some regulations on some toxins, but it's not enough. And the reality is many people are being exposed just through their tap water to levels of lead that are too high, or levels of copper, for that matter, or pharmaceutical drugs and other things. So I became very concerned about what is in the environment that is invisible and contributing to poor health. besides, you know, the food wars, nutrition wars, what should we eat and what should we do? I was really focused on what should we avoid in the environment and what should we minimize. And I came across the topic of cell phones and health and the controversy over our cell phones, a carcinogen. If you talk too much, will you develop a brain tumor, for example?
Sure.
And that was in 2015. I got obsessed with the topic and really realized that while many environmental toxins matter, the one that was the fastest increasing and also the one that was the most often overlooked was EMFs. And I realized that so many scientists have been sounding the alarm and really meeting deaf ears at regulatory agencies for literally decades. And we're talking about hundreds of active independent scientists that are experts in their field. And many of them were winning awards when they were talking about environmental contamination from heavy metals or, you know, acid rain in the case of Dr. Magda Havis from Trent University in Canada. But when they switch to EMFs, all of a sudden, no one is interested. So the entire topic is almost, you know, this untouchable topic on a scientific standpoint, where if you want to put an end to your career, you study EMFs. Really, this is how it goes.
Why? Why do you think that is? What's the?
I think there's a massive defunding campaign that is heavily influenced by lobbying at multiple levels. In the US, this is true. In Canada, this is true. And it seems to be also true in most of the Western world, where there is some funding originally came from industry and also a little bit from the government. But as the years go by, more and more findings are in the direction of EMFs are dangerous for human health and for the health of the environment. Even, you know, the studies on nature now, on the effects on pollinators, the effect on the microbiome of humans, but also the microbiome of the earth, soil quality, water structure. There's many different angles to this problem. And the more findings are found that go against the industry, the more the funding runs dry. It's really a very inconvenient topic. And I think there's also a human bias in there where many people would prefer that EMFs are perfectly safe because, of course, we're surrounded by these machines now. And we've essentially rolled out the technology that in the future will be regarded as the smoking of the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. I like that you've just mentioned, you know, so many of us are aware of, and we talk about this a lot on the podcast, but a lot of experts talking about various toxins and, you know, the detriments to our health. So we're looking for parabens, you know, we're to avoid, right? And we're looking at phthalates and we're not drinking out of plastic and whatnot. But I think you're right. I feel like EMFs are the least monitored, and they also may be something that I would say even my listeners know the least to do about, if that makes sense. And so yep. Through the show today, I think we'll empower them with some steps, and you have lots of steps in your book too. But I think we should define what EMFs are and kind of go back for a moment. So what are man-made EMFs, and how much has our exposure increased in the last decade?
Yes.
Please share that too.
Yeah, there's a vast difference between the natural EMFs that we've always co-evolved with, such as, you know, the Earth's natural magnetic field that is there. Part of it is the Schumann resonance at 7.83 hertz. And we know that this resonance, in fact, can help our circadian rhythm. And also we know that visible light and invisible light as well from the sun. So the lack of sun during the night, or even, you know, the moonshine has an effect on our biology, and all of these natural EMFs, we in fact need them almost like a vitamin, you know, vitamin D, and that research around that is showing that now it's not just a vitamin. It acts like a hormone. It's something that is closely interlinked with every biological process we have in the human body. So we co-evolved with these EMFs, but there's also human-made or non-native EMFs that we've introduced just in the last few hundred years. And the most prevalent one that we introduced in the last 30 years or 40 years is there's this radio frequency radiation signal that acts as a sort of electropollution these days. So it's not just the cell phones and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth gadgets. It's also the cell phone towers that we introduce. And now with the satellites, we're adding on top of all these technologies. So it's a lot of noise in the environment. And some people argue things like, well, we've always been exposed to these EMFs from space, and that's partially true, except they don't tell you that our exposure is now a quintillion times higher than what we used to get from space in that microwave range or radio frequency radiation range. A quintillion is a billion times a billion.
Thank you. I was wondering.
18 zeros after the one. That's a quintillion. So it is a tremendously higher exposure. It doesn't tell you about is it dangerous or is it not dangerous, but it tells you that something is new and it's at intensities that have never been seen before. And it's also with characteristics that make it quite more biologically active. An example is pulsation. In nature, you don't have signals that are pulsed the way a Wi-Fi is pulsed at 10 hertz. And these things make it so that our biology reacts in a way that is quite unpredictable, but generally is perceived as a stressor. And a good example for people to grasp a sort of EMF that I think has been more widely accepted as a hazard for health, and something that can disrupt your sleep, for example, is artificial light. If you stare at a screen, you are exposed to an EMF that is man-made because these are frequencies that do not correspond to natural light sources that we get from nature, such as the sun or fire, for example. Instead, we get a huge peak in the blue spectrum, and it keeps us awake. It prevents us from releasing melatonin, for example, which is a very important sleep hormone, but also an anti-cancer hormone that is quite potent. As a result, now, cancer researchers, especially in breast cancer, are saying women should start, especially cancer patients, but to prevent breast cancer, a good strategy would be to avoid screens. And it kind of sounds wild, but the reality is, you know, this is a type of EMF that everyone agree we can see, and we can also see the effect. The
argument now is, what if you put a blocker on the screen, like a blue light blocker? Is that going to mitigate?
Yeah, on the screen could work. Some people use software-based blockers on the screen, but it has some effect and it can help a little bit. Personally, I'm a fan of blue blocking glasses, although, you know, the research needs to be developed further to show their efficacy. Mm-hmm. I use yellow glasses during the day, generally when I work at a computer, and that's just for eye strain and for comfort when I read on a page and write for hours every day.
For the listeners, too, who can't see what you just showed, you showed your blue light blocking glasses, but they were of amber color. So a lot of times the stylish, you know, clear blue light blocking glasses are like blocking 10%. They're really not blocking much.
Yeah, that's not enough.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify for the listeners who couldn't see your glasses. Yeah, but
so
carry on.
Normally, before bed, if you really want to block these frequencies and have better sleep, normally we're talking about red lenses or dark orange rather than yellow. And this is really where you're going to block. Ideally, you want to block near 100% of the blue and green spectrum to have the best effects. But
how far, you know, before bed?
I'd say a good 2 hours before bed. What I personally do is that when the sun goes down, I put the yellow blockers on. And if I put in the winter, I'm in Eastern time. So in the winter, you know, it gets dark at 4 p.m., something like that, completely ridiculous. And then I go to bed at 10. So if I get 6 hours of blue blockers, I would literally fall asleep in the middle of my meal. So it doesn't work for me. It's actually too drowsy inducing, you know, for me.
So
I would put the yellow blockers on and maybe an hour before bed, especially if I watch TV. The TV screens these days are so bright that I'll put the darker ones. And sometimes I say, okay, just one more show. And after 30 minutes, my wife looks at me and says, you're falling asleep again. Yeah. And I mean, that's not so convenient to make sure you're up to date with your favorite shows, but your health will be better off. And of course, you need to go to sleep at this point because your body tells you, yeah, you know, I'm not very interested to watch Game of Thrones.
It's an example of how important and how effective these glasses can be. And then on the flip side, you know, the dangerous impact of not having them and what the blue light can do to you. So yeah, that's a good example.
Our bodies are naturally designed to handle stress, detoxify chemicals, and preserve cell function. But when the burden increases, those naturally built-in systems can't keep up with demand, and we start to experience physiological changes in our bodies. What causes that burden to increase? Unfortunately, a whole list of things, including common modern lifestyle habits like poor dietary choices, lack of sleep, abundance of stress, exposure to chemicals, and exercise extremes, just to name a few. To protect ourselves from this oxidative stress, our bodies are forced to use up stores of the master antioxidant, glutathione. And this works, for a while. But when those stores become used up, however, our body doesn't have enough antioxidant capacity to protect itself, allowing the stress to our body's systems to cause lasting damage. That's why I recommend many of my patients take glutathione daily to help protect their natural reserves, support full detoxification capacity, and help keep their immune systems functioning at full strength. Use code glutathione for 10% off at yourlongevityblueprint.com. Now, back to the show.
Okay, so the question is, though, that everybody has, like, at what point do EMFs become dangerous to our health, right? Like, how do we measure that? How do we know? I mean, I know you're saying, yes, at night, we don't want to have, you know, blue light in front of our eyes and trying to go to sleep, but that's, I feel like, the ultimate question. How do we know? What do we know? Tell us the science.
Sure. Well, what do we know? We know that other types of EMFs that are not visible, for example, the signal that your phone uses to connect to a cell phone tower, that signal is invisible, but it looks like the body is also seeing that signal in a sense. But it's not your eyes. It is other organs that are perceiving this signal. So for example, there are good studies showing that the pineal gland that is responsible for releasing melatonin will perceive radio frequency radiation from your cell phone as light and will get the same circadian effect that are negative, and you will lose sleep over it, or it will decrease your sleep quality. Another angle to this problem is the fact that this radiation from your phone, if you keep it right next to your pillow as you sleep, it might change how your brain waves behave. So that's a modification in your brain waves. And what is the consequence of that? Well, for example, in some set of studies in 2008, they've shown that healthy participants who don't describe themselves as, you know, sensitive to EMFs or any of that stuff, they're just healthy. They don't really think that EMFs are dangerous at all. And they get 30 minutes of exposure next to the head, and it makes them unable to fall asleep for an hour. Researchers said, and I found that really ridiculous, the sleep researchers said, well, you know, we shouldn't really say that cell phones are dangerous because it's only the equivalent of half a cup of coffee in the arousal effect that these EMFs cause in the human body. But isn't it a kind of dangerous thing to have before bed, or a very, you know, negative thing to have before bed, half a cup of coffee? And then they also said, well, we would be interested to run further studies because it sure looks like some people are more affected than others. So what about if for you, it's 3 espressos worth of stimulation? Then it makes you wonder why some people have insomnia. And I think that part of it is having devices too close to your body as you sleep. So one tip there is hitting that airplane mode button. It's not just when you board your next flight. It's really literally every night. Or if you need, you know, to be on call during the night or be available as a parent, then you put it in the next room. Just charge
distance
it on a kitchen
is on
table.
Your side. Yep.
Distance is your friend. Exactly. That's a common saying among scientists. And that's a very important one. And that's just the sleep effect. There are more concerning things than sleep, because of course sleep is important, but a more concerning effect might be the development of brain tumors, for example. So we know that EMFs in that range of radio frequency, and that includes your cell phones and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, they are a class 2B carcinogen. And that's since the decision by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. That was back in 2011. But in 2018, we had 2 major animal studies that increased, let's say, the likeliness that this data should be reclassified as a class 1 carcinogen. We have scientific studies from 2018 that said, we think we need to reclassify this agent next to tobacco smoking and asbestos. So if you don't believe this is dangerous, well, consider that several scientists that are at the top of their field consider this is equivalent to smoking. So, of course, when it comes to smoking, less is better. So, in a sense, time of use on your devices, if it can be reduced, especially extended use near the body, well, you want to avoid that as much as possible. And it's kind of silly in a sense, because the solution is not, you know, purchasing another gizmo or investing in my services, click here, pay me $1,000. It's just distance. It's fairly simple. You create a distance from your head and maybe use speakerphone or use wired earbuds to talk on the phone. And right there, you almost eliminate the risk of cancer to the head region, including glioblastomas. We see parotid gland cancers, acoustic neuromas as well. And then thyroid cancer is also on the rise. And there are good studies showing that maybe there's a link there with not only thyroid cancers, but different thyroid researchers are saying, we think it's impacting the thyroid in a negative manner. And since it's an organ that is in the surface, it's not protected as an organ. So therefore, it can absorb a lot of radiation. And they increasingly think that the epidemic we're seeing in hypothyroidism might be linked to the use of cell phones. Because of course, when you talk on a phone, your thyroid is getting exposed by a large margin.
Well, and I can see it just sleeping too, right? On your bedside table, your cell phone just being like parallel, like right in line with your neck. I'll tell you, after I took your course years ago, I kind of, as many people do, and listeners may freak out when they hear this episode, I thought, oh my gosh, I got to clean up my house. You know, and I had friends who at this point almost had like smart houses, their refrigerator there. You know, and I'm thinking, this is the worst. This is not what you want. And my husband at the time, so the master bedroom, I've shared this on the podcast already, but he has never been an amazing sleeper, but his head on the, you know, in the master bedroom bed was adjacent to the cable box on the other side of the wall. And so I got the meter that you had recommended. I want to get to meters at the end, but I went all around our house and now I have better equipment, but went all around our house and I thought, I mean, I put a Faraday cage like around our router, whatnot. Then, and yes, our router was emitting EMFs. The baby monitor was the highest. I will say that we had just had our son, and after a couple of weeks, got rid of it. I said, we don't need this crap. Baby monitor was emitting the highest radiation. In the cable box adjacent to his head, just a few feet from my head, was the worst.
Yep.
And we immediately started shutting off the Wi-Fi, and also we moved the cable box. We don't even have cable now. But back then we did, and that immediately improved his sleep, right? So we know, and I love sharing that example because it was just so immediate that clearly you're kind of talking about this stimulation, comparing it to, you know, the effects of caffeine or whatnot. But there is, you know, the stimulatory effect from these EMFs. And I actually want to kind of get into, which I've heard you talk about before, the relationship with the calcium voltage channels and like how EMFs affect them and why some people genetically may be more EMF sensitive. So just wanted to share that example. Thank you for those tips. But can we talk about the calcium voltage channels in that relationship?
For sure. Yeah. You know, one researcher that has been developing this further looks at not only calcium, but multiple ion channels might be impacted on the cell. And for those who don't know, on the cells, we have multiple channels in there that shuttle calcium, sodium, potassium, just to name these few, in and out of the cell. And that's the goal here, is always to keep the cell healthy and to bring the cell back to homeostasis. But one of the ways EMS might be impacting the cell is a very indirect way. It's not impacting the entire cell, but the voltage-gated calcium channel. So it means that at the door, what is opening and closing the door is a voltage, but it's an extremely low level of voltage. So therefore, it's not impossible to think that if we have external fields that contain voltage, right, they contain an electrical part and a magnetic part, and it looks like the levels we are exposed to, even if they were reduced by an extreme margin, would still potentially impact those channels and how they open and close. And what does that mean, right? Oh, if calcium flows into the cell, more calcium, yay. Well, it doesn't work that way. It works. Biology has certain sets of minerals in and out of the cell. It needs to keep that gradient in a certain way. If you mess around with that, the consequences are a little bit unpredictable. But what has been found is mainly it's a question of oxidative stress. If you have oxidative stress, a little bit of oxidative stress could be good. It's a signaling molecule that or many of them are signaling molecule that can in fact help the cell. But that's when you get one exposure such as exercise or even, you know, cold exposure, a cold plunge or sauna is very popular in the news these days. And the benefits of that are tremendous. You overheat and then your body adapts and then you get stronger. You get this beneficial effect only if you recover from that exposure. The problem is that if we have 24/7 exposure, the cell can never adapt to these exposures. So you have constant oxidative stress. And the cell needs to use its internal resources in order to control this oxidative stress. And it uses, for example, glutathione or SOD, superoxide dismutase or catalase. And these are your internal defenses, your internal reserves of antioxidants. And it's not just the antioxidant that you might take in a pill, but a lot of this production is internal. It's created by your body. But over time, what we see is that people that are more exposed to EMFs have lower levels of antioxidant. So over time, they have lower level of energy production in the mitochondria, these powerhouses of the cell. In other words, very simply put, I think that EMF is a stressor at the cellular level. And the more you are exposed over time, the more likely you are to feel this, let's say, this weight on your shoulder that over the years, you become more and more and more exhausted, for example, from these exposures. And what happens is that many people think, oh, you know, maybe this is aging, or maybe this is something else. And of course, everything else matters, such as the chemicals and mold and what you're doing in your everyday life. And are you sleeping enough? But it's a factor that is often overlooked. Who really talks about EMF when they talk about the few factors that matter in health? Not a lot of people, not nearly enough, in my opinion, of course. That's why I'm still doing these interviews every week. So it's really a matter of the dosage that you're getting, though. So it's not all hope is lost in the sense that we're always exposed to all these frequencies. So therefore, there's nothing I can do about it, right? That's something that unfortunately is the wrong conclusion that many people come to when they hear about EMS. And, you know, that's a bit of a discouragement that they feel. There's nothing I can do about it. In reality, if you control certain exposures, especially the ones that you can control because they come from everyday devices that you decide to put near your body in the end, if you have alternatives and mitigate certain things that are the biggest contributors to your overall cumulative exposure, then you can do a lot of good. And in fact, start recovering and feeling better in this modern environment.
And I want to get to all those too, but this is a longevity podcast. So I want to get to how EMFs can impact longevity and ultimately our hormones and our fertility. And you've kind of already answered a little bit of that as far as blocking melatonin and potentially the thyroid cancer risk, whatnot. But can you speak a little bit more to longevity and fertility?
For sure. Longevity researchers, I've looked into it, and there are many different opinions about what causes aging. So it's a bit tricky to talk about how EMFs impact aging. It depends on what theory you're listening to. But one of the theory of aging that is one of the most popular ones is the accumulation of oxidative stress. So if this is the case, you accumulate oxidative stress, and you might also accumulate DNA damage. Well, over time, we might say that EMFs directly contribute to premature aging. And that's certainly an agent you'll want to minimize if you want to live healthy and keep a body that is functioning in your old age at all levels. And especially oxidative stress that is, again, 24/7. On a hormonal standpoint, we already know that the strongest data we have that radio frequency radiation is what scientists call a classic endocrine disruptor. So many people hear this endocrine. What does it mean? Well, hormonal disruption. And many endocrine disruptors these days, people are starting to be aware. BPA, for example, phthalates is another one. You have the different chemicals that stay in our water when on cookware. Sometimes it leaches into your food. So all of these are examples of chemicals that will block your hormonal receptors or in one way or another change how your hormones behave in your body. And sometimes detoxing from them or avoiding them can help you bring your hormones back to balance. What they forget is that your cell phone is also an endocrine disruptor. In fact, certain scientists like neuroscientists from Stanford, Dr. Andrew Huberman, looked at the data on keeping a cell phone in the pocket and male fertility dropping to a lower level. So less sperm quality or motility or maybe sperm count, and also a reduction in testosterone. And he said this data is in fact more credible and more convincing compared to BPA. So it makes you wonder, you know, we're all about BPA free. And that's good. It's important. But why aren't we talking about, you know, your cell phone is also doing the same thing as BPA? And that's kind of a radical thing to say these days. But in fact, the data is already there. And this is what is concerning to me and shows that we're extremely behind on having independent health agencies that are up to date on the science, because to this day in the United States, the Federal Communication Commissions, that is the FCC, is responsible to regulate these things and the health impacts. And they've lost in court 3 years ago. The judges told them, the FCC basically said, we've reviewed the science and there's nothing to see here. So the judges received from activists and scientists thousands of pages of documentation about the potential health effects, the latest studies. And the judges look at the data and said, well, the FCC, you're completely wrong. Your decision is not based on science. You're going to go back to the drawing board and you're going to come back with a real analysis of the data we have to create safer safety standards. And to this day, the FCC has been stalling the case for 3 years. So the American public, and the same thing can be said in Canada and most of the Western nations and around the world for that matter, is kept in the dark to this day about these findings and about the fact that health agencies are completely disregarding the science we have, including the endocrine disruption. Mm-hmm. So effect on fertility is very strong. If it's not fertility, which is a little bit short term, well, there's the tumors and the fact that it's a carcinogen. If you want to live in your old days, you certainly do not want to have to die prematurely from a tumor. And a brain tumor is among the most dangerous types that you could get anyway. But sure, there are also concerns besides just the brain tumors. If it causes a brain tumor, if you talk on a phone right next to the ear, what could it do if you could keep it at another place, such as in your pocket, right next to your genitalia? And some researchers, we don't have much data on it. It's just, I guess, hypothesis or speculation, if you want, at this point. But many researchers have said, well, guess what is increasing right now in our youth? We have ovarian cancer, colon cancer. And then you say, okay, where are these things situated? Testicular cancer. All the cancers of the groin area are on the rise in our youth, and some of them dramatically so. So it makes you wonder, have we moved the problem from here to here, and I'm talking about right next to the ear or to the face, to then there, which is in the pocket or the groin area, where the same carcinogenicity might be seen, and we don't know to this day. So it's very, very, very concerning. We'll have the data maybe in a few decades.
That's not encouraging. That's, no, but yeah, that's the reality. Yeah.
No, it's not.
No, yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. I'm happy you shared about the impact on fertility.
I get asked all the time, what's one product that I just can't live without when it comes to maintaining my own health and longevity? And my answer is something you've actually heard me mention on several episodes. It's called Mitochondrial Complex, and it's pretty much the Cadillac of multivitamins. And it's packed with antioxidants, including three key players, acetyl-L-carnitine, alpha-lipoic acid, and N-acetylcysteine. Think of a steam engine that requires coal to be continually shoveled into the furnace to power the train forward. Acetyl-L-carnitine does that for your body by shoveling short-chain fatty acids into your cells to provide your body with energy. This is an absolutely essential task to keeping you running. However, what's a byproduct of fire? You guessed it, smoke. Unfortunately, in this analogy, smoke from fire equals free radicals. To combat those free radicals, other antioxidants are needed, and that's where alpha-lipoic acid and N-acetylcysteine come in. Together, they scavenge free radicals and help boost and recharge glutathione, the most potent antioxidant in the body. To top it off, Mitochondrial Complex also contains a little bit of green tea extract, broccoli seed extract with sulforaphane, and even resveratrol. Research has shown that when athletes and individuals that are under stress begin taking this product, they are less likely to get sick, as they're giving their body what it needs to conquer those stressors. Who doesn't need protection from stress and cellular damage at this time? I certainly do. I take this product every day. If you're interested in learning more about how Mitochondrial Complex can help support you living a longer, healthier life, check out my blog post on why antioxidants are important, found at yourlongevityblueprint.com/why-antioxidants-are-important, or in chapter 4 of my book, Your Longevity Blueprint. To get 10% off our Mitochondrial Complex, just use code ENERGY when checking out at yourlongevityblueprint.com. Now, let's get back to the show.
And my next question was actually going to be, you know, are there guidelines and like, are they being followed? And you're kind of alluding to that now, but what about in other countries, like in Europe? Are other countries ahead of us with guidelines?
Several countries are way ahead. For example, in France, you had in 2015, you had several new laws that were passed to minimize radiation in children in schools. So Wi-Fi is more restricted than, for example, in North America. Canada and the US are among the most permissive nations when it comes to EMF safety thresholds. Whereas in France, you have people that will take readings, and if the cell towers are over emitting compared to the levels that are approved by the government, the cell towers will be moved away. So it is more sensitive and more recognized in France, but also, you know, in even emerging nations such as India, there's been examples of the cell towers being moved away from sensitive populations, including schools, including hospitals. And in the meantime, in North America, we're starting to bring these towers, instead of moving them away from people, we're bringing them closer to people with the advent of the 5G networks. So when you look at how governments are behaving throughout the world, in North America, we're among the most reckless nations that are really going completely against the science and completely against what other nations are doing in how they think about these risks. It's really backwards. And it shows us, for me, it shows us how captured the health agencies have been and still are to this day. And I mean, I'm not making this up. The FCC has an entire report written by Harvard, their ethics center, called FCC a captured agency by Norm Alster. It's a good read if you really want to be angry at the FCC. If it turns out you want to have, you know, a light read before bed, it's something that makes you go, wait a minute, these lobbying powers are meeting the FCC 500 times per year, and they're essentially controlling the FCC. So it's not surprising that the FCC is not a health agency. It's essentially an agency that now serves as a tool for the industry. They don't have the health expertise, and they have no intention to go and, you know, lower exposure levels or any of that stuff. So it's going to be through the courts, and it's already through the courts, but it's taking a lot of time. So I'm thankful that, you know, you have attorneys that are fighting this fight. But in the meantime, what I'm wondering about and what I'm concerned is, in the meantime, people are kind of waiting for an answer. Is it dangerous? Is it not dangerous? What can I do about it? Yeah. And the reality is, we have to take matters into our hands a little bit when it comes to many of these topics. Sure. Because it's really, you know, later in your life, in 20, 30 years, that we're going to have safer phones, lower emissions towers. And these things are going to change. But in the meantime, if you want to live a healthy life now, or if you're thinking about your longevity now, you better start taking preventative measures to lower your exposure.
As he mentioned, EMFs can truly impact our health negatively in so many ways. Please keep your cell phone away from your head and body, and consider getting a safe sleeve case to block radiation and or put your phone in airplane mode when you can. As he will mention in next week's episode, Nick does have an upcoming EMF Hazards Summit in April, link of which I'll post in the show notes. Next week in part 2, I'll ask him his thoughts on Wi-Fi, microwaves, EMF blocking clothing, Apple Watches, and Bluetooth earbuds. You won't want to miss this. See you then!
Be sure to check out my book, Your Longevity Blueprint. And if you aren't much of a reader, you're in luck. You can now take my course online, where I walk you through each chapter in the book. Plus, for a limited time, the course is 50% off. Check this offer out at yourlongevityblueprint.com and click the course tab. One of the biggest things you can do to support the show and help us reach more listeners is to subscribe to the show. Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I do read all the reviews and would truly love to hear your suggestions for show topics, guests, and for how you're applying what you've learned on the show to create your own longevity blueprint. This podcast is produced by Team Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, wellness is waiting. The information provided in this podcast is educational. No information provided should be considered to be or used as a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult with your personal medical authority.